This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
So imagine you spent, I don't know, $1 billion building the world's most advanced, absolute, cutting-edge hypercar.
Right, like a fully loaded Bugatti.
Exactly. And then the very next day, your biggest competitor releases a car that is just 1% slower, but it costs 80% less.
Yeah, they basically mass-produce fleets of highly reliable, incredibly cheap Honda Civics for the whole world.
That is exactly what happened this week in the global artificial intelligence race. And if you're tuning in, you're probably trying to figure out what that actually means for the future of technology, business, and geopolitics.
Which is a lot to unpack.
It is. But you are the classic learner. You're someone who wants to cut through the noise and get straight to the aha moments without being overwhelmed. So welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
Our mission today is to unpack this really comprehensive intelligence briefing. It's dated June 29, 2026, and it covers a massive shift in China's national strategy across AI, robotics, and semiconductors.
Yeah, and to map out this shift, we are looking at a very specific stack of recent reports. We've got analyses from the Washington Post, CNBC, some really in-depth studies from the Brookings Institution and CSIS, and insights from a European think tank called Merix.
And we also have some upcoming tech launch specs, right?
Right, some brand new technical specifications. But just to set the ground rules for today's dive before we really get into it, we are exploring these geopolitical and economic maneuvers entirely objectively.
Just reading the board.
Exactly. I need to be explicitly clear to you listening that we are not endorsing any political viewpoints or national strategies here. We are simply synthesizing these factual reports to understand how the pieces are moving on the global chessboard.
Perfect. So let's jump right back to that hypercar analogy.
Sure.
Because for the last few years, the narrative has been entirely focused on the absolute frontier. You know, who has the smartest, most godlike AI model?
The race to the peak.
Right. But according to the Washington Post and CNBC, China has just completely walked away from that specific race.
They really have. They are no longer fighting for the absolute cutting-edge performance. Instead, they've pivoted to a strategy that we are calling intelligence per dollar.
Intelligence per dollar. Okay, break that down for me.
So the strategy is basically to take models that are, you know, good enough for 99% of tasks and massively proliferate them by undercutting the global market on price.
Like the Honda Civic?
Exactly like the Civic. We can see this vividly with Zippoo's new GLM 5.2 open source model.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at standard agent benchmarks, which test how well an AI can independently complete multi-step tasks, well, GLM 5.2 is only one percentage point behind Anthropic's Opus 4.8.
Just 1%.
Just 1% on the benchmark. But it costs one-fifth the price to use.
Wow. So you are sacrificing a microscopic sliver of performance for basically an 80% discount.
Exactly. And it's not just one company doing this. ByteDance just released their Doubao 2.1 Pro model.
Oh, yeah. I saw this in the briefing. It took the number one spot on the terminal bench coding benchmark, right?
It did. But the crazy part is the demonstration they ran. It autonomously wrote 1,303 lines of RTL code for a chip design. And it did this over 18 hours.
Okay, wait, let me pause you there. 1,300 lines of RTL code. What exactly is RTL code? And why does that specific detail matter?
Right. So RTL stands for Register Transfer Level. It is essentially the architectural blueprint language used by hardware engineers.
Okay.
So they use it to design physical silicon chips. This means the AI isn't just writing software for some new app. It is autonomously designing the physical circuitry for the next generation of computer chips.
So the AI is literally designing its own future brains.
Yeah, and doing it entirely uninterrupted for 18 hours. And ByteDance is offering access to this model at roughly 80% cheaper than Claude Opus 4.6.
That is just wild. And they are aggressively pricing these to capture enterprise users, right? Like DeepSeek V4 Pro.
Oh, the DeepSeek price drop was massive. They offered a permanent 75% discount.
Permanent.
That drops their cost down to 87 cents per million output tokens.
So 87 cents for a million tokens of output. What is the real-world consequence of a price drop like that?
Well, it immediately catapulted DeepSeek to the number one trending software vendor among U.S. companies on the RAMP expense platform.
Wait, really? Number one in the U.S.?
Yep. U.S. companies are actively flocking to this because the financial gravity of that discount is just too strong to ignore.
And we also have to look at the broader context of why that's happening. The U.S. has heavy export limits on frontier models, right? The briefing mentions restrictions on models like Fable 5 and Mythos 5.
Exactly. So if you are a global company operating outside the U.S., you are basically blocked from accessing those top-tier models.
You literally can't get the Bugatti, even if you wanted to.
Right. And as those limits block access, China's MIT-licensed open-source models are swooping in. They are becoming the default alternative for global companies.
Because they're open-source.
Yeah. With an MIT license, developers anywhere can take the code, modify it, and build on it. It transforms the AI race from a purely technical challenge into this complex regulatory and economic takeover.
Okay, but here's where I get stuck. You can't offer software at an 80% discount unless you are fundamentally restructuring your hardware costs.
You absolutely cannot.
I mean, processing 180 trillion tokens a day requires a colossal amount of physical computing power.
Yes, it does. Which brings us to the chips themselves.
Right, the semiconductors. And this is where the sources get really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The Tech Insights report says CIMIC China's top chip maker achieved 5-nanometer mass production.
They did, yeah.
But they did it using older DUV machines,
yeah,
without the cutting-edge EUV tools. I thought that was notoriously inefficient and expensive. Why would they do that?
So to understand why, you have to visualize the difference between those two machines. EUV, or extreme ultraviolet lithography, uses an incredibly fine wavelength of light to draw microscopic circuits.
Right.
Think of it like painting a miniature portrait with a single hairbrush.
Highly precise.
Super precise and efficient. But DUV, deep ultraviolet, uses older light technology. It's like trying to paint that exact same miniature portrait using a thick marker.
A thick marker for a microscopic job? That sounds like a nightmare.
It is. They have to use multiple passes of that thick marker to try and mimic the precision of the single hairbrush. And the Tech Insights report confirms we're seeing the results of this in the new Kirin 9030 processor.
Okay, so they're actually producing them.
Yeah, about 10,000 wafers a month. But because you're using the wrong tool, a lot of the paint gets ruined, the yield is much lower.
Which means it costs a lot more to make each usable chip.
Exactly. It carries a 40 to 50% cost premium over what a company like TSMC would pay.
So they are eating a massive financial loss on manufacturing while giving the software away for 80% off. Again, why do that?
Because for China right now, strategic self-sufficiency heavily outweighs raw economic efficiency. Those chips are vital. Huawei and Alibaba need them for their AI processors.
Ah, so national security trumps profit margins.
Exactly. But this inefficiency combined with insane AI demand is creating a massive bottleneck.
And we are seeing the ripple effects of that bottleneck in the briefing. There are impending July price hikes across the board. Over 10 Chinese chip makers, alongside global firms, are raising prices 15 to 30%.
They have to, just to manage the demand bottleneck. And despite the inefficiencies, a Brookings report in our stack looks at this and basically concludes, quote, game over.
Game over. That's a pretty stark assessment from a place like Brookings.
It really is. They point out that the U.S. is essentially out of the AI chip market in China. NVIDIA's share dropped from over 95% in 2019 to under 50% today.
Wow. Half their market share gone.
Gone. And Chinese domestic chips are projected to take 41% of their own market by 2025.
But wait, if this shift is so massive, why hasn't the U.S. cracked down harder recently? The CNBC report mentioned the U.S. Commerce Department, under the Trump administration, has held off on adding over 100 Chinese companies to the entity list for 8 months.
Right. Companies like DeepSeek and CXNT.
Why delay that for 8 months and give them all that time?
Well, the entity list is basically a trade blacklist. It's an economic death sentence. They held off to avoid escalating geopolitical tensions.
Okay, but 8 months is a long time.
It's an eternity in supply chain logistics. It gave those companies crucial time to stockpile equipment, refine those DUV processes, and basically build capacity before any hammer could fall.
So they basically built a bunker.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got the cheap AI brains and we've got the homegrown chips. Here's where it gets really interesting. What happens when you take those cheap AI brains and those chips and you give them a physical body?
Right. Stepping out of the server room and into the physical world.
Yeah.
Embodied AI.
Yes. The briefing highlights the launch of UBTech's U1 humanoid companion robot, launching June 30th.
Which is huge.
It costs around $30,000, and they already have 5,000 pre-orders. But the specs say it features 88 degrees of freedom and local encrypted memory. What does 88 degrees of freedom actually mean in practice?
So, a degree of freedom is basically an independent joint movement. To give you some context, the human hand has roughly 27 degrees of freedom.
Okay.
So a robot with 88 is hyperfluid. It's incredibly lifelike and articulate.
Oh, wow. So it's not some clunky 1950s sci-fi robot.
Not at all. And these are subject to some brand new regulations kicking in on July 15th regarding, quote, AI anthropomorphic interaction services.
I saw that. They are explicitly banning virtual lovers for minors and requiring clear labeling for emotional interaction.
Which tells you exactly what they anticipate these robots will be used for. Companionship, elderly care, living room integration.
But how do you manufacture an 88 degree of freedom robot at scale? The Merricks report says China produced about 12,800 humanoid robots in 2025.
Yeah.
That is claiming roughly 90% of the global market. How do you dominate a new hardware market that quickly?
By leveraging something they already dominate. You have to think about their massive electric vehicle supply chain.
Oh, right. Think of it like a giant bin of Legos. They already spend years building up the infrastructure for the batteries, the LiDAR sensors, the high torque motors for the EVs.
Yep. An EV needs sensors to see the road. A robot needs those same sensors to walk down a hallway. They are just using those exact same Legos to build humanoid robots.
Which completely undercuts the rest of the world on parts.
Completely. And the Ministry of Industry and IT just laid out goals to deploy over 10,000 of these robots across more than 100 different scenarios by year end.
Manufacturing, disaster response, you name it.
Exactly. And Premier Li Sheng recently gave a speech at the summer Davos, pushing for AI to be treated as a global commons.
A commons? Like a public utility?
Right. Because they are processing 180 trillion tokens a day. They are moving AI out of servers and into physical factory floors and living rooms, treating it like electricity.
Okay, so when you combine all of this, commoditized AI, homegrown chips, and a monopoly on robotics parts, it forces the rest of the world to make very uncomfortable choices. Let's look at how this impacts a country caught right in the middle, South Korea.
South Korea is the perfect example of the geopolitical squeeze here. You had the PEXILICA second summit in Washington recently.
Right.
35 countries, including South Korea and the EU, signed the AI Opportunity Joint Declaration. It's basically the U.S. trying to tighten up this allied semiconductor wall.
But there is a massive contradiction here. South Korea's vice foreign minister signed this U.S.-aligned alliance document. But in the exact same month, May, South Korea's semiconductor exports to China surged by 243% year over year.
Yeah, a 243% increase.
That is staggering.
It is. And the CSIS report explicitly calls out South Korea and Germany, actually, for lagging behind Japan and the Netherlands in implementing these U.S.-aligned export controls.
Because their economies are so heavily tied to those exports.
Exactly. And there is a really insightful commentary in the briefing from lawyer Kim Kim-jin. He compares this current AI price war to the solar panel market in the 2000s.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Right. Back then, China closed the tech gap in solar and then used rock-bottom prices to completely restructure the global market.
They wiped out the competition by just making it too cheap to compete.
Exactly. And he's saying they are running the exact same playbook right now with AI models.
So think about what this means for you, the listener. Imagine running a business where you are being pressured by one superpower to cut ties with a specific country.
Uh-huh.
But that same country is buying 243% more of your product than last year, while simultaneously offering you AI software at an 80% discount.
Right.
How long can you walk that tightrope?
Not very long. The financial gravity usually wins out eventually.
So we've covered a lot of ground today, from the software price war and the intelligence per dollar pivot to the massive inefficiencies they are swallowing in chip manufacturing.
All the way to the physical robotics takeover fueled by that EV Lego bin.
Exactly. It's all driven by a strategy that clearly values widespread, inescapable global adoption over being the absolute frontier leader.
It is. And it leaves us with one final lingering question to mull over. We've seen from these sources how China is trying to turn AI into a cheap global public utility, much like solar power.
Right.
Well, if they succeed and AI software becomes dirt cheap everywhere, does the real power of the 21st century shift away from the coders in Silicon Valley and entirely into the hands of whoever owns the physical grid, the batteries, and the robots that actually do the work?
Oh, wow.
It's something to think about, right?
It really is. It totally changes how you look at a $30,000 robot.
Completely.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the narratives you hear, and we will catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.